This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest.
Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Thanks so much for joining us. Remember that you can always find us on Facebook or email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. This evening, our guest is Kelly Weinberger with World Finds. In just a few moments, Kelly will be back and tell you all about what she's up to. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock.
I went walking and ribbon the highway. I saw above me, and in the skyway, I saw below me, that golden valley. This land was made.
Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. And this evening, our guest is Kelly Weinberger with World Finds. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, Carol. I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm a little busy these days, but that's always a good thing in my book.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Enjoying a little sunshine. All of the reports are showing snow in California, but here where I'm at right now in Sacramento, it's bright, sunny, a little chilly, but for California, a little chilly, bright, sunny, and beautiful. And I'm so happy that you are with us. Can you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on here. Such a pleasure. So I'm Kelly Weinberger. I'm the founder of World Finds. World Finds is a brand of ethically sourced jewelry and accessories that provides all sorts of goodness to women in need in the developing world.
And how was it that you came to start World Finds? I imagine that's kind of a beautiful story of your journey.
Yeah. When people ask what I do, I always tell them it's a little unusual, but and it was absolutely a very circuitous route that I took to start World Finds. But what happened was I was leading sort of a regular, very normal life in my 20s. And I'd been working in Chicago and I'd been working at a publisher and recently gotten married. And it was a conversation that started like, what should we do next? And travel came up and it sort of grew from there. And the thought was, you know, let's take some time off and go backpacking around the world. And we were able to make that happen. We started out in Morocco, the start of a 14-month journey. We sort of went, it also was very circuitous. We sort of went through Africa into three different points and traveled through Europe and the Middle East and Asia. And it was partway through this trip, I had just gone through India and was up in Nepal and had met some fellow travelers. And one of the travelers was from New Zealand. And she mentioned going to visit a women's cooperative because her mom was very much into fair trade. And I had not heard the term fair trade before. So I was like, what is that? Please explain this to me. Tell me what fair trade is.
What year was that, Shelley?
This was way back in the fall of 1999. So we are
early days of fair trade, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the history of fair trade absolutely goes back long before that. But it was much less well known than it is now. And I mean, it's still, you know, absolutely niche and not mainstream by any means. But it was even more so, more unknown way back then. So I, you know, went with her, met with the women's cooperative, and I had my light bulb moment. Like, this is amazing. This is absolutely something that I want to do. So the rest of our travels and throughout our backpack trip, I was spent learning more and more about sort of the plight of artisans and learning more about, you know, how fair trade sourcing happened and economic disparity and what types of products were available and skill sets and what it would really mean to develop something that could really help, you know, pull people out of poverty. And so that was sort of how it all started. And I I came up with the name. We sort of reserved the domain name on a website at a cyber cafe in Kathmandu, and the journey sort of started from there. So yeah, so it's been in the works, it's going on for a while.
Well, and you said something very interesting that perked my ears up right away, which was pulling people out of poverty. And I think we'll have a chance to talk more about that. But before we go there, can you share a little bit more about your own personal story? Where did you grow up? Who were your influences? What is it in your background that kind of prepared you or primed the pump, so to speak, so that when this opportunity came your way, you did have that aha moment?
Yeah. I don't know if there's like one specific moment growing up, but I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in the Chicago area and was always very curious as a child. I was a big reader. I also liked to make things and liked to do a lot of things and make things and was, you know, involved in music and things like that. And then I don't know, I've just been fascinated by other countries and other cultures and how people live differently from the way we were, you know, living in the Midwest, and just kind of always being open to really wanting to learn more about, you know, how other people went about doing the same things that we were doing here. That sort of always had that fascination. I actually started out college as an Asian studies major before switching into advertising and more marketing focused. So I'd always had sort of this, you know, fascination with the rest of the world. I was luckily able to do a study abroad, and it just sort of piqued my interest even more to want to explore even more of our planet and get to know, you know, different cultures and people on around the earth. And then that just sort of nicely dovetailed with a way to, and at the time, very little was known about sort of for-purpose businesses or social mission-based businesses or, you know, anything like that. So it was just one of those things like, well, if I'm going to do this, it has to be helpful to someone. Mm-hmm. And so that was probably why I had that wonderful moment when I learned what fair trade was, because I was like, oh, this is great. It's business, but it's purpose-based, and it's actually going to be doing some good in the world. And so then I could get behind as sort of a great project to attach myself to.
So where did you study advertising and marketing? And you mentioned studying abroad. Where was that?
So I went to University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, and then I was able to do a study abroad program in Vienna and Budapest. And at the time, it was, you know, you always sort of travel on your weekends, and I was able to get to countries that no longer exist, like Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia and places like that. So that too was absolutely, you know, more different from what my experience growing up, and it just sort of was even more intriguing and I think absolutely made me want to learn more and get to a little bit more remote places around the world, which, you know, now we're primarily working in India right now. So that's been just an amazing experience, you know, getting to really spend time with and get to know a group of artisans over the years.
Do you feel like your advertising and marketing background really prepared you for what lay ahead and what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think, you know, and so much of what we do, I think it's just a culmination of all of our experiences. You know, I had a job working at a jewelry department in a retail store in high school, and you never think those experiences are going to be helpful later, but they are so helpful. And yeah, I think just, you know, experience working at, you know, different companies in my 20s and just getting as much experience as possible and in different levels, I think all really helped when I sat down and was like, okay, I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to figure it out. I have never started a business before. I don't have an MBA, but I know to ask a lot of questions and, you know, be a good listener and really try to just sort of figure things out. And all of that experience absolutely came in handy when I embarked on that journey.
So let's talk a little bit more about the mission of World Finds and what sparked my interest that you said a little earlier, which was alleviating poverty. Is that part of your mission?
Yeah, absolutely. World Finds is a fair trade business, And we are part of an organization called the Fair Trade Federation. And just a really brief definition of fair trade is basically it's an approach to business and development based on, you know, mutual dialogue, transparency, respect, that purpose is to create greater equity in the international trading system. So basically, our purpose for being in business is to help the artisans that we partner with to help rise out of poverty. And it's through job creation. So the products that we create, you know, with our design team here, you know, that they produce, that work helps lift them out of poverty through the fair trade wages and the regular orders and the partnerships that we have with the artisans.
And how did you decide on your business model? Was that, did that spring purely from your mission and your values, or did you have to do some research and kind of see what would pencil out the best?
Yeah, and the model's changed a little bit over the years. I think, and so many things, I think when you first start out with your business idea, like my very, like the most raw part of the business idea I had is still absolutely intact, but I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to get there. And so part of it was importing, you know, samples and products. And I had, this was way in the super early days, we just got back from our, you know, 14-month backpack trip, and I had this great new idea and I was full of, you know, enthusiasm. And so many of my friends jumped in and had trunk shows to test that model to see if the products would sell and how desirable they were and was I, you know, going about this the right way, and everything did really well. I started moving into wholesale. Shortly after that, I had a friend that had opened a store in Lakeview in the Chicago neighborhood, and she started, you know, buying products from me wholesale, and she kept reordering every week. And I was like, you know, I think this is the channel that I really want to focus on is the wholesale channel. So I can spend more time on, you know, developing products and, you know, spending, it's a lot of time to spend with the artisans, you know, in creating and developing products. And that just seemed to work better as like a business to business model. So it was basically through trying different channels just to see which one was the best fit for me, because at that time it was just me. And that absolutely made the most sense. And so I started just working with, you know, meeting the stores and eventually doing trade shows to meet new retail partners. And we've pretty much stayed a business-to-business model since then.
So from a consumer standpoint, and this is a little bit of a story that relates to how I found you, I bought a beautiful scarf that it's just my favorite. And I wear it almost every day. And I looked at the tag and I said, World Finds. And then I Googled World Finds, and that's how I found you. How do you connect directly with consumers? Is that who you market to, or do you focus those efforts B2B?
Yeah, and it's so funny because from the early days, especially when it was just me, we have a smallish team. There's 10 of us now, which is great compared to when it was me, like one person. And I knew then I couldn't do both retail and wholesale well, so I made the choice to do wholesale, which is business to business. And so who we sell to are retail stores, and they can be bricks and mortar stores, or they can be online stores or museum shop stores or fair trade stores. People like that are our customers, but we absolutely love interacting with consumers. We have a store locator on our website, so you can find all the places that you can, you know, find World Finds items around your home. We're in about 950 stores around North America. So hopefully there's something, you know, out there and we're available, but we love connecting on social media and absolutely loving to hear from consumers and seeing them in our products, and love hearing that they have a favorite scarf. That's one of our very favorite things. So that's awesome. Yeah.
So we're at that halfway point. We're going to take a quick break. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Today we are speaking with Kelly Weinberger, and we will be right back shortly. Enjoy.
The sun comes shining, and I was strolling in the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds roll. As I went walking, I saw a sign there, and on the side.
Hey, we are speaking with Kelly Weinberger of World Signs. Hi again, Kelly.
Hello.
You know, the next thing that I was hoping we could really go to is this whole idea of fair trade. It's kind of like, you know, one of those buzzwords, sustainability or green, but do we really know exactly what that is? Is there a widely accepted definition of what fair trade is?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think in the most, like the simplest of terms, the way I think of fair trade is really the high bar of ethical sourcing. So, you know, there's a lot of fair trade out there now, definitely less so. I mean, when I first started, there was, you know, maybe one or two organizations that were, you know, involved in fair trade. And now there's a whole bunch of them out there. So it does make it a little bit confusing. But for example, we are members of an organization called the Fair Trade Federation, and they work with, you know, groups in North America, and everyone who goes through this very rigorous vetting process to become a member has to really, you know, turn over like all of their books and practices and how they go about, you know, doing business, you know, make sure that they're following a series of 9 principles and practices that, you know, have been sort of officially defined as requirements to be considered fair trade. They're very similar to the principles and practices that are defined by the World Fair Trade Organization, which is a larger group that works with all of the artisan groups globally, whereas the Fair Trade Federation focuses on North America. So it's really, you know, showing and proving that you are rigorous in your sourcing, and everything that you're doing sort of from start to finish throughout your business is, you know, basically designed to help, you know, pull artisans out of poverty and following all the principles and practices. So that's just sort of one way to look at it. So that's absolutely the high bar. And so it's great to look for organizations that are members of either the Fair Trade Federation or the WFTO, the World Fair Trade Organization, as far as, you know, the best place to go to get your, you know, proper definition of fair trade. And then for commodities like coffee and bananas and chocolate, there are other labeling organizations out there that are also doing really good work, like the Fair Trade Labeling Organization. And so a lot of people have some different symbols on their products. So that's one thing to look for. Otherwise, it's looking for membership in the organizations like the Fair Trade Federation or the WFTO.
You mentioned kind of 9 requirements in order for a company to be fair trade certified. What are those requirements? Can you just tell our listeners what those might be?
Yeah, absolutely. First is to create opportunities for economically and socially marginalized artisans. It's basically a strategy for poverty alleviation and sustainable development. And this is achieved through long-term trading partnerships. For example, a lot of our artisan groups that we work with, we've been working with since, you know, 2001, 2002. So, you know, very long-term. Once you partner with an artisan group, it's a commitment. The second principle is develop transparent and accountable relationships, remaining open, fair, and respectful. The third is to build capacity. Over time, you want to develop and grow organizations. So that's an important one. The fourth one is to promote fair trade, just by, you know, explaining exactly like what we're doing right now about why this is important and why these choices are so important in you know, consumers' purchase habits. Pay promptly and fairly is, again, another key one. And the fair wages are determined in the local context. And there are a lot of indicators that we use to make sure that, depending on where the artisans are located, if they're in an urban environment or a rural environment or what country they're in, there's fair wage calculators. There's all sorts of indicators to make sure that the wages that are getting paid to the artisans are fair, and then they're paid fairly and promptly. The next principle is support safe and empowering working conditions, free of discrimination and forced labor. The next one is cultivate environmental stewardship, We are absolutely very conscious of the environment and sustainability in our sourcing. And, you know, all of those types of things come into play when we're designing products and we're figuring out how to ship and you know, making sure that, you know, our workplaces both here and at our artisan groups are, you know, as sustainable as possible. Ensure the rights of children is the eighth one, you know, absolutely not using child labor, nothing exploitative, and, you know, making sure that children have a right to childhood. And the final one is respecting cultural identity. A lot of times we will develop products that, you know, take a technique that maybe a very traditional technique or something that's in danger of going away, and we'll create products that use that to help, you know, keep it relevant and keep the cultural respect and diversity up.
Throughout your entrepreneurial journey, everybody has highs and lows. Maybe it would be beneficial to share what some of your challenges and wins have been in the past. You know, how did you take on those challenges and find solutions?
Yes, I think in anyone's entrepreneurial journey, there's sort of, you know, sort of a never-ending array of challenges that can present themselves. And I think in fair trade, it's probably, you know, exemplified, just because, you know, there's so many things that can go wrong on this end, and there's so many things that can go wrong on the artisan end. When you're, you know, sourcing and you're working in the developing world, and, you know, governments can change and currencies can change, and there's just random things that sort of happen left and right. I think part of it is just personally on the business end in this office, there has been, you know, when you first start out as an entrepreneur, there's oftentimes, you know, great growth that happens the first few years. And that is absolutely what we experienced. And then with the economic downturn in 2009, that was absolutely a challenge to try to keep getting, you know, the same amount of work back to the artisans when we'd had a lot of our retail partners close their stores. And so it was one of those things that was hard to live through and deal with, that with our orders were not going to be quite as large as they had been. But at the same time, the silver lining is it absolutely makes you be more creative and try to come up with new product lines and try to do more product modifications and figure out like what sort of changes you can make to make your product line viable and, you know, thriving in a different economy. So, you know, there's always, I think, challenges and things that present themselves, and it's really just sort of being stubborn and continuing to ask questions and trying to find new ways to go about conducting business.
What kind of challenges do you see your artisans facing regularly? You know, kind of the story from their perspective.
Yeah. Well, right now we are mostly working in India. We do have a group of Jolene Silver artisans in Indonesia, but primarily we work in India. And India has just changed in like so many ways over the past nearly, you know, 20 years that we've been working there. And there's just always something that, and again, it's good and bad. Like so many amazing things happen. Like we usually visit our artisans once or twice a year. So we're back in India on the ground, working in the villages with the artisan groups. And, you know, a lot of times wonderful things happen. Like we'll be on a trip and we'll discover a road has been paved that we remember has been just, you know, a dirt or plagued with potholes or very hard to get around. And then suddenly, you know, an amazing change happens. And so there's changes like that. And then there's, you know, changes like, oh, the government decides to change the currency and everyone has to figure out how to navigate that. So there's sort of a never end to the surprises that can happen over there, but amazing things too. So,
can you share some of those amazing thing stories with us?
Yeah, we've been very lucky. We have sort of, by a happy accident, stumbled on a jewelry line design. Our artisan's been working on with some repurposed textiles for some bags for us, and they had had a lot of scrap fabric. They had been playing around with the scrap fabric and decided to design some jewelry using the scrap fabric. And from that first cuff bracelet that they, you know, designed just for fun, we have created an entire sort of collection around this repurposed textile jewelry. And it's been amazing growth because it's a repurposed item as well as women-made, fair trade, handmade. It's sort of, you know, hits a lot of areas, plus it's super colorful and it looks great on social media. So we have been able to expand our artisan facilities. And so we were visiting our artisans in September, and we were able to open a second building of artisans in the village that we work in. And that was just like moving us to a level that we could not imagine. Clearly, you know, capacity building was one of those fair trade principles I just mentioned. And this was seeing it at its best, that the fact that we had gotten enough business to the artisan group to grow to the point where they were able to bring in a lot more women and train them and actually have an extra facility set up to cover all the work that we were sending their way. So that's, you know, absolutely a highlight of one of the most amazing things that we've had happen so far.
And what have you seen? We've got about 2 minutes left, but I really wanted to share with everyone maybe some of what you've seen firsthand in the women's lives and the workers' lives, working fair trade as opposed to non-fair trade types of endeavors.
Yeah, they are. It's kind of amazing. I mean, they have a sense of security because they know that they're going to be paid and that they have a future. And with the fair wages that they're receiving, they can now send their children to school. And there's money to buy books and school uniforms and necessities for the house. And, you know, it's just they feel so confident in themselves as well, because they're the ones that are there every day and earning the fair wage and, you know, and doing it with a lot of dignity and respect. So it's just amazing. Yeah.
So we've unfortunately come to the end of the shows, and maybe you can share with our listeners how they might find you, Kelly.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us on our social media channels at World Finds or World Finds Fair Trade, and you can get a hold of us through our website at worldfinds.com, and you can email us at info@worldfinds.com.
Thank you so much for being on Heartstock. This is Carol Murphy. We'll see you next week. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.